Welcome to The Juice Today, an audio edition of The Juice that lets educators and parents stay informed about what their students are reading.
Okay, hello there, and welcome. We'll hit the main points and maybe suggest a couple of things you could, you know, chat about with your kids or students.
Sounds good. We've looked through 6 different articles they might encounter. Ready to jump in?
Let's do it. First up, something related to the grocery store. It's titled, Blackberries, Potatoes, Crack, Infamous, Dirty Dozen of Pesticide-Affected Produce.
Ah, yes, the EWG report. That's the Environmental Working Group. They put this out annually.
Right, and what's the gist of it?
Well, they test a lot of samples, like nearly 50,000, of non-organic produce. And this is after washing, peeling, scrubbing, the usual prep.
So they're looking for what's left over. Exactly. Pesticide residues. And they compile this dirty dozen, list the fruits and veggies that, according to their tests, tend to have the highest amounts remaining.
And the headline this year mentions blackberries and potatoes joining that list.
That's right. There are new additions this year, alongside familiar ones like spinach and strawberries, grapes too.
The article also mentioned a clean 15 list, right? Yeah. The ones with fewer residues.
Yep. Things like avocados, sweet corn, pineapples tend to be on that side. It gives people information to work with.
So for a discussion point with students.
Well, you could start just by explaining the lists, you know, what the EWG found in this report.
And then maybe broaden it out. Like, how do we decide what food to buy? It's not just about pesticides, is it?
Not at all. There's cost, health, taste, environmental impact. Organic versus conventional. It's complex. A good real world topic.
Definitely.
Okay,
let's switch gears completely. Next article. California teen, state's youngest lawyer, accepts job at prosecutor's office.
This is quite a story. It's about Sophia Park.
And she's 17 and a lawyer. 17 years and 8 months old when she passed the California bar exam, the youngest ever in the state.
Wow. How did she manage that? The article must explain.
It does. She's the daughter of Korean immigrants, and she basically did everything online, super accelerated, high school, college, law school.
Started law school at 13, it says.
Yeah, imagine tackling legal studies at that age.
Yeah.
Just incredible focus.
So what's she doing now?
She's actually joined the prosecutor's office in Tulare County, California, working alongside her brother, who's also a prosecutor there.
And the article mentions her wanting to serve the community.
Yes, she talks about upholding justice and serving the community. The DA specifically mentioned her choosing to represent victims.
Okay, so for discussion, obviously her achievement is amazing.
Absolutely. Just talking about her path, how she did it at such a young age.
And maybe connecting it to her goals. The article highlights her desire to help.
Right. You could ask students, you know, what qualities make someone a good helper or leader in their community? Use her story as a starting point.
Good idea. Okay, next topic is a bit more serious. Child gun deaths rise in states with loosened firearms laws. Study finds. This is about a study in JAMA.
Right. The Journal of the American Medical Association, a well-known medical journal.
And the study looked at gun laws.
It looked at states that changed their firearm laws after a big Supreme Court ruling back in 2010, making them more permissive.
And compared them to states that didn't change their laws.
Exactly. They analyzed data from 2011 to 2023.
And what was the finding reported in the article?
The key finding was that states loosening their laws saw a significantly higher number of firearm deaths among children and adolescents compared to states where the laws stayed the same.
The article said thousands of excess deaths.
That's the term the researchers used, associated with those more permissive laws. It also noted the largest increase was among Black youth.
And it mentioned CDC data, too. Guns being the leading cause of death for under 17s.
Yes, mainly homicides and suicides, according to the CDC data cited, not accidents.
Now, the article also points out that the study faced criticism.
It does. It mentions that gun advocates questioned the study's methods and called it biased. It's important to include that perspective for balance.
So talking about this requires careful handling.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Focus on what the study found, as reported in the article. You're just relaying the information.
And maybe discuss the broader issue it raises, that tension between rights and public safety.
Precisely. How do we balance individual rights, like the Second Amendment, with efforts to improve public health and safety? The article sort of puts that question out there.
Okay. Moving on to something quite different, the quote of the day, Anne Frank.
Ah, yes. Featuring her very famous quote, "In spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart."
And the article gives context about her life.
It does. briefly explains who she was, a young Jewish girl born in Germany who had to hide from the Nazis in Amsterdam during World War II.
Hiding in that secret annex for years, writing her diary.
Right, until they were discovered, tragically. She and most of her family died in concentration camps just before the war ended.
But her diary survived, published by her father.
Yes, and it became this incredibly powerful personal account of the Holocaust, read all over the world.
So discussion points here. Understanding her story is key.
Absolutely. Talking about her life, the historical context of the Holocaust, why her family was hiding, what they faced.
And then digging into that quote itself, coming from her in those circumstances, it's profound.
It really is. What does it mean to hold on to a belief in human goodness when you've seen and experienced such terrible things? It's a deep question about hope and resilience.
Heavy stuff, but important. Okay, fifth article brings us back to current issues. Social media running amok with fake posts about LA violence.
Yes, this tackles misinformation online, a very timely topic.
So there were real protests in LA, but social media exaggerated things.
That's the core issue. The article says while there were some actual anti-immigration protests in specific downtown areas, social media got flooded with false posts painting the whole city as a war zone.
And these were outright fake posts.
Yes. The article gives examples, fake stories about who is causing violence, false claims about the military being involved. Experts quoted say this stuff really ramps up real-world tensions.
It mentions specific examples, too, like old photos being reused.
Right, like old pictures of bricks presented as if they were just handed out to protesters now.
Mm-hmm.
Or misleading videos that even fact-checkers and AI sometimes got wrong initially. It shows how tricky this stuff can be.
So for students, this is a great example of what? Digital literacy.
Exactly. Discussing the difference between a real event and how it gets twisted or faked online.
And the impact. How does this online stuff affect things offline?
That's the other key point. How can online misinformation shape what people believe and maybe even contribute to conflict or fear? Really crucial for kids to think about.
Agreed. Okay, one last article. The Ohio State Buck AI's university to require all students to take AI courses.
Yeah, cute title. But a significant move by Ohio State University.
They're requiring all first-year students to take courses on artificial intelligence starting soon.
Starting fall 2025, according to the article, makes them one of the first big public universities to do this across the board for every student.
Why are they doing that?
Well, the university leadership basically says AI is going to be everywhere in almost every job. They want all their graduates to be fluent in AI.
Fluent, meaning more than just knowing how to use it.
Right. Understanding how it works, its potential, but also how to use it responsibly and ethically. That seems to be the goal.
How are they structuring it?
It starts with a general education seminar on generative AI basics for first years. Then AI concepts get woven into other required courses. Plus, there's an extra AI class available for anyone.
They admit it's a challenge adapting teaching and testing for this.
Oh, yeah. The article mentions that. It's a big shift for curriculum and assessment.
So discussing this with students, it seems pretty relevant to their future.
Absolutely. Talk about how AI is already showing up in their lives and how it might change different careers they're thinking about.
And maybe explore why a university thinks this is essential for everyone, not just tech majors.
Yeah. What skills do students think will be important in an AI world? Is it all technical or are other things just as vital? Good questions to ponder.
Okay. That covers our six articles for today.
Quite a range. Hopefully these quick summaries and discussion ideas give you, the parents and teachers listening, some helpful context.
Yeah, just a little something to help you connect with what students are reading and thinking about. Well, thank you for all the work you do supporting students every day, and thanks for tuning in.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to this overview of The Juice Today. Students read these stories at their own reading levels to improve their comprehension, vocabulary, critical thinking, and more. Learn more at thejuicelearning.com.